Art is a form of rebellion in a fascist world, so finding acceptance and community is really important in the world the way it is currently. And acts of rebellion can be small or large, and we have so much to learn from the media that affected us as children. Those things from the 80s and 90s, where we watched our heroes beat the big bad, and now it's our turn. And we may do that through legislative work, we may do that through legal work, or we may do it through rebellious art.
Welcome to the Break the Chains, Find Your Flame podcast. Our goal of this podcast is to provide insight and wisdom into all things mental health, to sit down with individuals and talk about their journey, how they've broken free from the chains that bind them, to find their flame, their passions, and purpose. Happy Halloween! Welcome to our spooktacular episode, our Halloween episode on Break the Chains, Find Your Flame. We're so excited to have you. We took a little bit of time off, but we're now back with a great episode. Our guest today is Jay Urich, and Jay is an awesome, awesome individual. So excited to meet with him and talk about all that he does, his art, and how he has lived his life to be authentically himself and make a difference in the world through art, through connection, and with his amazing knowledge of all things pop culture from the 80s. We get in depth about some movies and graphic novels. And Jay actually has a great solution to casting Dick Grayson, Nightwing, aka the first Robin, in a live action show. For all of you who may not know this, there's a little bit of controversy about how to do it. We get in depth about how to do it. But more importantly, Jay has great tidbits on how people can live their life authentically and how they can live a life of resistance against oppression. And he shares openly about how he does that and how he wants everyone to embrace their inner cryptid to live their fullest life. So without further ado, here's Jay. And that beautiful robot voice means we are officially a go, Jay. We're starting the podcast now. Everyone else is probably like 4 minutes into the podcast because I do the introduction and kind of talk about what we're talking about and the music and then the podcast introduction. But they're 5 minutes in. They know who you are and some of your background from my point of view, just the high notes. But I always like to start the podcast with what we call the origin story, keeping with the comic book theme of the podcast. I'm wondering if you, Jay Urich, can do your origin story for us and what's bringing you here today.
So I started a brand last year called Octopus Design LLC, which features my art and some other queer artists' art. And what kind of led me here is it's kind of a long, convoluted tale, and I'll try to boil it down. Is I grew up in rural Pennsylvania and was bullied pretty extensively for being non-Christian and for being what I've now come out as is a transgender. And then moving to Los Angeles and spending a great amount of time there. And I had been in the closet at that time. And then coming out as transgender after I had an accident and was bedridden for 14, 15 months. And just being with yourself, laying in bed, you kind of have to face yourself.
Yeah.
So that led to me then eventually moving back to Pennsylvania and starting my business.
Oh, that's great. And I know in your business on your website, you talk about what led you to kind of build some of that business, and why, how you felt like there was a lack of punk related pride merch out there, and you know, especially a lack of like cryptid kind of themed pride merch, which I thought was really awesome and enjoyable. It's like, you know, I didn't think about that, but yeah, your merch is the only ones that I've seen that with it through my, you know, going through the internet and looking for stuff. But I liked how you had said that in your profile, kind of talking about yourself of growing up in like an abandoned forest and then moving to LA kind of solidified your art style of how you kind of marry those two kind of lives that you lived in different. Obviously, those are two different environments to grow up in, but anyone who sees your merch, I think, can really specifically see that come through for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's such a part of who I am. Here in Pennsylvania, and I now miss LA. And when I was in LA, I miss Pennsylvania. I grew up with a family that was very focused on self-sufficiency and things like that. And then to go to LA and have that experience of being accepted as trans unexpectedly and being pulled by some coworkers of mine very strongly into the metal and punk communities there. It just, I really saw a lot of queer people in that space as well, who were like, there's nothing really for us. And so I really wanted to create something because, you know, there were so many people saying when they go to Target or Walmart, any of the big box stores, they're like, this stuff doesn't really represent us. It's very bland. It doesn't represent our experiences.
Yeah, it's kind of, you know, their celebration, right, of like, oh, you know, it's Pride Month, we want to put some stuff out there, but it's a very like watered down version of it because it's just colors of the flags or something of that nature. But is it
Yeah, absolutely.
and doesn't speak to the authentic kind of experiences of like what I get from, you know, just seeing your TikToks and seeing your work and what you do is the stuff that you put out in Octopus Design, it seems authentic to your experiences and stuff that you love and the stuff that you enjoy. And it's very, I don't want to say niche at all, because I think it spans a huge gap of things out there, but very specific to like the joys of what you love.
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought it was going to be very, very niche down. And a lot of the fans that I'm getting are not just within my niche, but I'm getting a lot of, say, Gen X parents who now have trans kids who identify a lot with like 80s fantasy. So because I have some of that influence in my work, they see it and they buy these items. And also to just take a stronger stand, like my Exist Out of Spite design is. It's just a very much a statement of I am here. That's just the end of the discussion. We're, you know, all of us are here.
Yeah, that's what kind of spoke to me when I first came across your TikTok, you know, months ago, was were those buttons. I got them on my bag here. I keep them on my strapped on my bag. I'm a huge a lot of listeners don't actually know this, but I have joy and love for book bags. I don't know why. I like having multiple pockets, and that's what I bring to work with me and put all my files and computers in a bag. I like beanies quite a bit and hoodies. And but like bags are kind of that niche thing that, you know, I get really excited about. And my wife at home is like, can you stop buying bags, please? You have five of them and you don't need them. I was like, well, actually, this is my rock climbing bag. This is my travel bag. This is the bag I use to bring snacks when I take my daughter to her sports events. And this is my work bag and my camping bag. So I need all five of those bags. They all serve a purpose. But yeah, that the Exist Out of Spite buttons, and I want to get into that a little bit later, but I love them. I think the design is great. And you know, I really love all the other cryptid stuff and how much you've branched out on what you were doing with your art. I think it's great to see that growth. But before we get into that, you just unlocked probably something that's going to take up a lot of time in our conversation today was 80s fantasy, very
Yes.
specifically. So I'm wondering if you can kind of expand on that a little bit of your joys and what maybe what some of that looks like and what you really enjoy about 80s fantasy or growing up with that kind of theme and how that comes into play for you.
So for me, I think being a queer youth and not really having blatant representation in media, it's like the fantasy element hit me a lot more. My favorite movie of all time is The Dark Crystal. Absolutely.
Good.
I
Definitely
just
have
watched
them.
it again the other night. I love it so much. And I really identified with these stories, especially being bullied by especially religious people around me growing up. These stories of just like this, these impossible odds and just succeeding. There's another franchise that I love so much. It's called ElfQuest. And it's about these elves that are being basically at the beginning of the story, they're being hunted by humans who think they're evil, according to their god. And it just and a lot of the elves are queer in the stories, which is very progressive for the 70s and 80s when it first started coming out. And so I just devoured these stories because I wasn't getting any sort of support except somewhat from my parents. But outside of that, I was very much not getting support and, in fact, was being bullied constantly. So those stories just gave me a way to basically process what I was going through and identify in these stories. And then be able to continue on. And it led on, like, I'm sure a lot of queer people who grew up in that same era, you know, your big awakening was watching Xena. Like, Xena did it for us all.
Oh, Xena, so good. I love Xena so much. I did not like Hercules as much. I thought Xena was much better paced and well written, but
There's a reason Xena became way more popular than Hercules's.
Well, yeah, and look at Kevin Sorbo now.
You
There's a
said
reason why people were like, oh,
it, not me. I wasn't gonna say it. I'm like, can I say that on the
I don't know. Maybe I'll get slander charges against me, but whatever. It's kind of a badge of honor if I'm making Kevin Sorbo mad over
Hey, the guy that played Aeolus isn't a problem as far as I know. Like, they could make an Aeolus show from Hercules, and I would watch that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, but I mean, Dark Crystal, I think, is a fan. First of all, let me commend your choice in 80s fantasy movies, because that is definitely an amazing story. I never did get to watch. I think they did. I think Netflix did another version of that, or so, like
Yes.
mini series on that. I never got to watch that yet, but I wonder if it captures any of the magic of the first one, or if it's derivative at all.
It's amazing. So many of these franchises that are revived are awful, and it was just amazing. Absolutely. I can't believe they canceled it after a single season. And it's based on someone had taken some fan fiction and then it got approved to be an official book series. To the best of my knowledge, that's what happened. So it's based on a book series. And I went out and bought all of those as well. It was so good.
All right. Well, I'll write it down. I'm trying to introduce my kiddo to some of those movies. We started with The Princess Bride because it is one of my favorite movies, and then I think we're gonna do Labyrinth next. But I'll put Dark Crystal on there too and expand out there.
Yeah, maybe during the day though. That's movies, even as a kid, was so scary. Even as an adult, I'm like, I
Yeah,
forgot
it's hard.
Hercules might
She's way
be.
braver than I am, because I remember seeing Jurassic Park in the movie theater when it first came out and freaking out about the arm falling out of the, and she was like, "Huh, I wish more people died." I was like,
What?
"Okay, maybe we can check out Jaws. Maybe we can do Dark Crystal. I think she might be up to it." We're actually talking about watching Gremlins as a Christmas movie coming up, but I'm not sure if she's at that level yet.
I actually have not seen that. It's just one of those ones I never got around to. Maybe I'm gonna have to watch it this year.
Yeah, I mean, some of these movies, it's hard because it's like, is it nostalgia that brings us back to it, or is it actually like themes and thematics? And some of the core ones that I've seen that are some of my favorites still kind of hold up. But then you have like Howard the Duck, which does not hold up at all. And
Yeah, not at all.
highly do not recommend watching that again, because it will shatter. If you liked it as a child, it will shatter some of your preconceived notions of film and storytelling, for sure.
Well, you may know more about this than me, but I think there's going to be a lot of studies done here in about 30, 40 years about especially millennials and Gen X and somewhat Gen Z, but are just obsession with nostalgia because I miss there's like I just want to watch Sonic the Hedgehog on a Saturday morning again so bad, you know.
Or for me, it was like the 90s X-Men TV show.
Yeah.
That and like Spider-Man were my go-tos, and it was cool that they brought the 90s back on Disney and like continued that storyline. It was really fun to kind of recapture it. But you're right. I mean, it'd be interesting to kind of see studies and like that need for nostalgia and what that's meant to do. I mean, we could probably guess what it's really related to somewhat, but
I mean, I have
it's
my own hypothesis about it that because we're kind of coming to this late stage capitalism, there's really nowhere, was nowhere better for us to really get. And so that's why we're going through this great upheaval now, the world becoming so terrible because it just couldn't continue the way it was. So we're kind of looking back, you know, like in The Matrix, they talk about the peak of human civilization was 1999. And it kind of was. So we have to go through these terrible times. And this is what I'm telling a lot of the trans youth that I'm talking about. Since I'm 40, I'm older than them. I remember what things have been like. And talking to them, I'm like, there's always an after. And this is terrible, and we need to get through it as fast as we can. But in a way, it was kind of inevitable.
We could probably have a whole subsection on the Matrix and talking about it, because I do not understand the Matrix hate that people give on, oh, the first one was revolutionary and the other stories were not great. I thought the movies were fantastic, and I really loved what they did with them, with like some small kind of editing maybe, but like I really was locked into the philosophical kind of story behind it. And I think the first one hit so hard because it was like revolutionary on how it was filmed and the graphics and things of that nature. But for me, the real shining star about The Matrix was like the philosophy and storytelling behind it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that story really hit me hard at that point in time. I was just starting high school when it came out. And I wish I still had the journal, but I wrote about, because I was trying to come out as trans then, about how I felt it was a trans allegory. And years later,
You
they admitted it.
were
I'm like,
proven
yeah,
correct. You're like,
I had
wait a
no
minute.
proof, but.
I mean, I think you're right on what you're kind of talking about. Is like this is actually interesting, because when you were talking about the late stage capitalism and like that concept of, oh, 99 was as about as good as it got until it started evolving. I think it's also interesting when you look at just capitalism in terms of toys and things that are produced. I think there was a period where things became better quality because they had more technology to do things. I mean, just talking about action figures, I remember the first X-Men action figure I had was Wolverine, and had like this inset on his forearm where you could push it and the claws would pop out and then you could retract it, right? But there was no movement. It was like, oh, these toys only have 4 points of articulation. It's the shoulders and the legs, right? And then as you've kind of got deeper into it, like into the 90s, maybe even early 2000s, they started being more about articulation and making them poseable and making them like really good quality and things of that nature. And then I feel like people saw a market for it, and then the quality of some of the toys just kind of shit the bed after that. They just started pumping them out more and more and more. And like, don't get me wrong, collectors are going to collect whatever's created. But even in how we have like a bunch of How to Train Your Dragon toys at home, and even with like the newer iteration of those toys, they just feel really 3D printed as opposed to like actual time spent designing. And it's just, I felt the same as you're talking about, is because of that late stage capitalism. It was like, oh, we need to create more, and that heart isn't as much in it as it was back in. Maybe
Well,
I'm
you can
just
see.
old and grumpy,
No, I think you're absolutely correct. There's a couple of things. Like, one thing is I have, gosh, I think it was Sonic 3 when the Sonic 3 game came out in the 90s. It was McDonald's or Burger King had the little toys, and I still have them on display on my shelf, and they look great. They're great little models to have up. But if you go to McDonald's today and get whatever toy is coming out for whatever movie, it feels like garbage. And that's like a really good indicator, I feel. And then also I noticed in the early 2000s that they started making toys and then writing a show for the toys. So, and that that I think is a lot of the problem as well.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at back at some Hasbro toys that did that, would create a toy line and then, market a TV show after that. But I think that was much more about, I guess it is capitalism too, but I feel like they created, a good show in good toys. So maybe that's my grumpiness coming. It was like, yeah, but that was like He-Man and G.I. Joe. But that's my nostalgia too. So
Well, but like you said with Howard the Duck, it's like you can go back. I can watch the original Sonic, where it was like the darker show, the one that had the Freedom Fighters and things like that. And I'm like, I'll sit down and watch it all, and I'm like, it holds up. There's some like one-liners that are a little cringe, but as a storyline, it still holds up for me.
yeah. Gargoyles is another
Yeah.
one that I think also really holds up, and I'm actually kind of amazed they haven't done something with that franchise at all
Yeah,
recently.
I really hope they do. Actually, part of Gargoyles was actually based on that comic ElfQuest I was talking about, the creator of Gargoyles. So they were influenced by Wendy and R Richard Pini, who do ElfQuest.
See, we're 20 minutes in, and would you have guessed that we would be talking about late stage capitalism and to the toy industry? I don't
No,
know.
no. I
We go to
had all
fun
these notes
places.
for to talk about other stuff, and now this is
Well,
better.
but I do kind of want to talk about your art, and I think you're very humble on social media of talking about your art and seeing stuff become popular and kind of reminiscing of like, hey, I had no idea that this was going to hit this way. I was just kind of doing this because I saw a need. Can you talk a little bit about that journey and how that kind of transformed for you?
Yeah, because my art has gone through several iterations. So after seeing The Matrix and after seeing Final Fantasy VII, playing Final Fantasy VII, I had wanted to go to computer animation school, and I dropped out after 3 months. I did not make it very far, and I had given up on art for a while, and then had started again and actually got a tattooing apprenticeship. And right about the time I was actually getting paying clients, I literally had one and about 10, one done and 10 people lined up is when I had my accident, and I damaged my spine pretty severely. And so the tremors I have in my hand now from the accident make it so I cannot tattoo. There's just I will never tattoo again. And so I was pretty hurt about it for a long time. And then I just really decided that I was going to let my art just be a little scratchier, be a little wigglier. And I wasn't measuring up to a lot of these artists on TikTok who have these very smooth, beautiful designs. But then with AI coming out, people really wanted that. They wanted to look at a piece of art and see that a real artist made it. And I feel like I had a lot of comments to that effect. I had a lot of DMs to that effect. I had people who were finding me in real life and commissioning me for work. And it's just like it exploded in the past year. And after having my art kind of ignored for the past 30 plus years, it's just kind of exploded in the past year. And so it's just like I have this very distinct idea of my art being unlikable, and it just hasn't been enough time for me to process, like, oh my goodness. Like, now I place orders for 500 patches, and sometimes they sell out in a week,
Yeah, that's great. I'm so glad to hear that because I do think that really challenges that perception that people internalize a lot. It's like, I like to do this thing, but maybe I don't have, the quality of what people are looking for. It challenges that concept of perfectionism. And I think it's amazing that you got to the point where, like, you know what? I'm just going to let my art be what it is. And it's going to be a little wiggly, it's going to be scratchy, but that's just my art, right? In this iteration of things. And I think people responded to it really well. I don't even know how I came across your TikTok, but as soon as I saw it, I was like, yep, I bought pins for myself and I sent pins to a family member because they're just exploring their identity and going to Pride and finding value in Pride and send them to them. And it felt really cool to, support a small business, but also like the imagery that you create is really cool, and that line of exist out of spite was it felt very, very strong to me, especially at, this was about a year ago, but even more so now, of just like really needing to be a community and support everyone who's kind of being kind of put down by, the intensity of stuff that's out there right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And that phrase had followed me since I came out as trans in 2017, because I was very scared. And I'm like, I'm just gonna do it out of spite. And I had done some smaller, sketchier art pieces about it. But spite has gotten me through a lot of different things in life. And spite doesn't have to be a negative thing. It's just like I'm just ignoring the societal expectations. I am just going to continue doing what I'm doing until someone makes me stop, basically, or pass away of old age. But I'm just going to keep going. And I really wanted that for others. I'm like, you don't have to keep explaining. The trans community spends a lot of time trying to explain ourselves and justify ourselves. Do not need to. My body belongs to me. I can do what I want.
Yeah. And I like that reframe on spite because people hear it and they've already have a negative connotation to it. It's like, oh, okay, so that's not a great thing to do. But in reality, it's like, in spite of other people, in spite of, what society is trying to tell you, being authentically yourself is like revolutionary and a radical idea is not necessarily that deep. It's like, no, that's just who you are. And so all these people are trying to tell you not to be, and you're going to exist just because you exist, right? I think that's beautiful.
Absolutely. And one of the things that it means for me, which some people may not get from the word, is sometimes we can do positive things out of spite. So one of the things I like to do is just be kind or send like little presents to friends or things like that. And it's like I can convince myself to do it more if I'm just like, hey, I'm getting away with something, than if I think, oh, this person doesn't want to hear from me. I'm like, I'm gonna send you this little thing to make your day.
Yeah, take that. Here's a present.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, well, it really turns things on its head because we often think in such a binary kind of way about emotions or words or things of these nature. And I really think it is just like, what you put into that word or how you use that word really defines it, and not so much as a generalized kind of concept of it, right? So like the idea I often talk about with people about emotions is people categorize emotions as good or bad, when in reality they're neither. They're just, messages that come up, and they're there for a reason. Some of it's like environmental, some of it's physical, and like a depletion in neurons or neurotransmitters or gut health. But I think if we actually spend time, listening to what those messages are and really spending time with it, like we don't have to define them as good or bad. They're just kind of, okay, let me honor that and see where it gets me. The thing that I talk about a lot with people is shame, and shame is this thing that people hate, and it doesn't feel good a lot of the times, but it's also because what are we doing when shame comes up? We're trying to hide from it. But if you look at shame, it really is kind of a protective feature, which sounds counterintuitive because it's like, well, why would I have to do feel that way if I'm trying to protect myself? But shame actually is trying to stop you from being vulnerable because you've gotten hurt before with being vulnerable. And so I think there is a lot of work that you can do with like turning things on their head and redefining things in a way just by sitting with it and seeing what comes up.
I think you're spot on. When I came out, I did it overnight. So I went from being like a goth pinup type of person in a dress to the next day I came to work in a suit and I cut my hair and wasn't wearing makeup anymore. And I just decided to do it. And my coworkers and I had never been really close. And the first day they didn't know how to interact with me. They didn't know what was going on. I thought it was rejection, but on day two, when someone finally approached me and asked me, they banded together, and this group of extroverts kind of, I jokingly say, carried me away because I've always been an introvert. and brought me into their world and going to the metal shows, the punk shows, and the raves. And but I was processing a lot of shame at the time and a lot of guilt, because a lot of trans people don't even live to be 32, and I was coming out as 32, and I felt like, oh, maybe I'm not really trans because I waited so long, even though I've tried to come out before and things like that. But I had to realize that that shame was just trying to protect me from the violence I had experienced in my teen years. That it was just my brain trying to protect me, and I could say thank you and then try to move on from it.
Thank you for sharing that. That's very poignant and personal. So I do appreciate you sharing that.
It's too important to the story to leave out, but I know it can
But
be a bit much.
I always think it's funny because, like, I feel like people who are in the punk scene get a bad rap as being like rude, and there's like a certain image that gets kind of portrayed with it. But like the people who I've always connected with who are in the punk scene are the kindest people. They just like what they like, and it for people who are insecure, it kind of feels like abrasive. But it's in reality, I think it's like, no, they're just genuinely being themselves and expressing themselves in a way that feels genuine.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like we would do things like have art days, and I would teach all these big metalheads how to paint. One of the big things they would do after every show, I'd be like, "Hey, everybody come over to my house and see Kali, who's my rescue cat." And then everybody would want to come and carry my cat around. So it's these big bearded battle jack wearing guys, "Kali, Kali," at the end of the night. So I was teaching some of them to knit and crochet because I knit and crochet as well. Punks and metalheads are what's the quote? That they're teddy bears cosplaying as villains, something
I
like that.
will write that down. I like that. Oh, well, we should probably keep talking. Already, I just realized I'm used to like taking notes when I'm in session and pauses are general. I'm like, oh wait, we're actually doing a podcast right now, and that silence doesn't translate to audio listening. No, that's a great, understanding of like the complexity of human life, right? It's like we get bombarded by all of these messages or societal messaging and viewing people in a certain way of just how they look or what they wear and things of this nature. And we never actually get to understand that deeper part of that person. And it's happened to me a lot because I have a lot of tattoos and I generally have a beard that like people feel like I'm very standoffish, but I'm just socially awkward, right? And so like I'm observing a lot of new scenes until I get comfortable, and then I'm doing karaoke and singing Madonna at a high register because I love singing the high registered songs and have fun just kind of feeling the music and doing that. But I've had friends come up to me and it's like, I was deathly afraid of you when I first met you because I thought you were like this mean guy because you're tattooed. And I was like, no, I just like to observe a lot because I need to ground myself into it before I'm comfortable expressing myself.
Well, things people from other countries comment on about Americans as well is that we're kind of expected, probably because a lot of us have done customer service, to have this performative niceness, I would say. So I've gotten that as well, where people are like, "Oh, I thought you were so mean," and then you're like the biggest sweetheart I've ever known, and I'm like, "Man, I'm just too tired to smile all the time for no reason." But if you engage me, absolutely, like, and
Yeah,
I'm like.
if you talk about stuff I like, you will see a whole different side of me. No, but that's fantastic. I'm glad that we're kind of having this deeper conversation about this and how this is manifesting in the work that you're doing. So let's talk about Octopus Design. Like right now, we've talked about some of the pins and designs that you've had out there. What we haven't really talked about more is the cryptid kind of connection. Can you talk a little bit about maybe some people don't know what that is and why that speaks to you to kind of include that in your art?
Yeah, so the octopus character itself, so it's OCTOPUSS, was my imaginary friend when I was being bullied, when I was first trying to come out as trans. And And it had like the skull of a cat, and it spoke through tentacles out of its mouth because, and I feel like I needed this character to be bigger and scarier than the bullies I had in my life. And so that kind of led to me being interested in more cryptids. I grew up on 500 acres of forest. So I spent a lot of time in the woods, saw a lot of creepy things. So it was a very much a part of my childhood that I actually saw these things that spooked me. But I felt safer there than places like school or around a lot of adults.
Right. Is that kind of where, because you have this line that I wanted to ask you about that I thought was really awesome. It says, embrace your inner cryptid.
Yes. Yeah, because especially with queer people, I feel like there's a really strong connection because we get told we don't exist all the time.
Yeah.
Or we're just kind of existing out there, or in that in a way that people have their own, what it really boils down to is they have their own internal struggles with it. Because queer people, especially trans and gender non-conforming people in general, really expose the silliness of the gender norms in our society. And I think that's one of the reasons we're being attacked so much is because we really kind of peel away and expose, oh, it none of this really matters. It just matters what you want to do with your time on this earth and who you are. And the powers that be don't like that is being questioned.
And so they're trying to push that narrative down and destroy
Right.
it.
Yeah, and that's why I named the company. There's other names I had considered, but I just went back to it because I actually launched this company like 15 years ago and it failed. And so I saved up again and I waited all this time and I tried again. And I'm like, this is a love letter to that 12-year-old who was on the living room floor with her first set of, the quote unquote good pens and pencils and markers and drawing little cryptids and drawing Dragon Ball Z and all those kind of things and what the hope that that kid had and the unfilteredness of that child.
I too drew Dragon Ball Z quite a bit.
R.I.P. Akira Toriyama.
Yes. What a lovely creation you've made for this world, for sure. I can't keep up with it now, so I get my Dragon Ball Z fix through TikTok and just watch like the summations of what the episodes are, and I'm always like, okay, what's the next power level? Because it's just going to keep going up. There's no end. But I did really like how they kind of backed off of Goku just being like the only one who's powering up, and they
Yeah.
included a bunch of other people. So.
See, my favorite episode is when Goku learns to drive. Like, I love the world building episodes so much. Anything to do with the Capsule Corp, anything where they were out talking to some of the sentient dinosaurs and things like that. Like, man, you could do 500 episodes of that for me. I really loved it.
Right. Yeah. No. Because it kind of just, it's something that very in its heart is that's what it's about. But it just has a lot of action and fighting included in that, right? Because Goku's character, if you don't watch the show, seems weird because he's so all over the place with what he's doing, right? He's just so not there. That's the biggest joke, is that Piccolo is actually Gohan's dad because Goku just doesn't show up ever.
Right.
But to
Vegeta's
be
a
fair,
way better dad.
yeah, but to be fair, Goku was dead for a decent amount of that too.
You can't fault him for that part.
But yeah, no, I mean, the more I used to love Goku, I still love Goku, but I think Gohan is probably one of my favorite characters in totality of the Saiyans, because I just like how he reminds me a lot of like Dick Grayson as Robin, where Dick is a great foil for Batman, where they have very similar experiences but very different outcomes, right? Because Gohan goes on to be like, oh no, I want to be about family. I'm going to start a family. I want to go to school. I want to educate myself. And Goku's like, how do I get stronger? Let me fight the strongest person and I'm going to make it win. Right. And so Gohan has that same kind of storyline where he could have gone that way and at times does, but he's like, oh no, this is what's important to me. And that's why, Dick has always been my favorite, Robin and eventually Nightwing, because he has the same tragic storyline as Batman does, but he meets it in the, love and community and friendship. And Batman's like, let me alone in the dark so I can brood over everything. So again, we're going to all these weird places, Dragon Ball Z, my love for Dick Grayson as Nightwing. There's a lot of stuff going on at TikTok that you can't cast a good Dick Grayson because just how awesome he is. And also it's like comic accurate that he has a really nice butt and they can't find an actor that has a nice enough butt to play Dick Grayson.
They need to talk to the drag queens because they know how to make butt prosthetics.
That's fair. Hey, you heard it here first. If someone casts Dick Grayson, it's because of this podcast, because the drag queens came in and saved the day. So awesome. So I've loved talking with you, Jay. I really appreciate you coming on and being open. I know it's kind of out of your comfort level, but I think you've shared a lot of awesome points in your story, and I really appreciate your openness to do that. And that's the reason I do the podcast, is if anyone hears this and can kind of connect to any of the messages, then the job's done. I don't care about subscribers or listeners, as long as one person gets value out of what we talk about or, connects to any of the messages that we talked about. For me, that's the job of why we do this and why we have guests like you come on. But also, if you want to be a subscriber, hey, it helps us get more people. So, don't shy away from that either. My little plug there. But we end the podcast with two questions all the time. I'm going to give you both, and you can choose which order you want to answer them in. So, one is if you could have any superpower, what would it be and why? And then two is what is your real life superpower?
Ooh. So my real life superpower is seeing patterns. I'm notorious for that. So I can usually find solutions to problems, which has worked in past jobs that I've had, or friendship problems, or with my own business. And it's really hard to quantify, but it's just like always, I'm like, yeah, I see a way through this. I see a web to get there, and people can never understand how I see that. So that would be my superpower that I do have. For a superpower that I want to have, I mean, part of me wants to say like selfishly to fly, but part of me would want to be able to make anyone see the truth of the matter for anything. Because there's a lot of misinformation in the world right now. And it would just be like, whether, even for myself, whatever the truth is, I just want to know it at this point. And I want others to as well.
My guests are always more kind-hearted than I am, because people sometimes ask me what I'd pick, and I always tell them I'd pick the ability to control probability, because in a world of superpowers, then I could have any superpower that I'd want. And I always feel like, oh, that's a better answer, that you want to like break down like lies and barriers to people. And I'm like, oh yeah, I can face through walls because there's one in a million chance of someone getting that power, so I'm gonna do it.
That's a really good power, though. I have actually thought about writing comic series because I'm also notorious for almost doing things. But almost doing something will lead me to doing something else entirely. So I was going to write about a superhero that almost did things, and then at the end, when they're facing the big bad, they would just look at them and say, "I almost let you win," and that's how they would.
I like it. That's cool. No one steal that, because I want to read Chase comic on that. So don't steal that idea. And I'm glad that you said big bad, because I used that in a writing sample I did one time, and I always have my wife like proofread, because she's really good with grammar. She's like, "What does big bad mean?" I'm like, "You are obviously not from the same geek community as me, because people from my community will understand that." And she's like, "That's not, just sounds weird." And I'm like,
No, it's a phrase. It's just shorthand, basically.
Yes. But thank you for saying that because it validates that I'm not the only one who uses that in general conversation. No, that's cool. I'd love to read more of your stuff if you are working on anything. I'm working on some kid books that use superheroes to teach like coping skills and honoring of emotions. So the first one's about so it takes place in like a danger room where they have like a robot teaching them these skills to join a team. And so the first one's about mindfulness and the second one's about honoring your superpowers. And so it's like honoring emotions and things of that nature. And the third one is building your utility belt, which is about coping skills. So I always love like hearing people like what they're working and what they're vibing with. So
Well, next thing for me is I'm doing the Exist Out of Spite patches, this big back patches, so I'm learning how to use Kickstarter.
all right. Awesome. I can't wait. So one last thing before we end today is I always like to ask the guests to if they could sum up in about a minute summation. What they want people to walk away from this podcast with, or what they want people to take away from this podcast, what would it be?
Gosh, because we touched on so much nerdy stuff too.
We did, yeah.
Yeah, like, so I just want to say, art is a form of rebellion in a fascist world. So finding acceptance and community is really important in the world the way it is currently. And acts of rebellion can be small or large. And we have so much to learn from, the media that affected us as children. Those things from the 80s and 90s, where we watched our heroes beat the big bad, and now it's our turn. And we may do that through legislative work, we may do that through legal work, or we may do it through rebellious art. There, that's what I got.
Fucking right. Let's go. I love it.
Okay.
What a rallying cry. I love that. Also, though, go watch The Dark Crystal.
Yeah, well, I just watched it. Now I'm debating
Not
paying
you,
for Netflix
Jay. I mean,
again.
the
Oh,
listeners.
me.
I mean, you can. No, we referenced a lot of really cool shows, and some of it may be nostalgia for us, but I think a lot of what we talked about has really good messaging. And I think it's pretty badass to see David Bowie as the Goblin King. So,
In Labyrinth? Yeah,
Labyrinth.
yeah. Yeah, so
What?
if you're going to take anything away from this, keep rebelling and go watch The Dark Crystal and go read ElfQuest.
Yes, ElfQuest. I got to pick that up again. I read it when I was younger, and I don't think my mind was completely. I liked it, but I don't think I grabbed all the nuances of it. So I have to go reread that. So,
It's free to read on their website, most of the issues, except the newest ones. So pretty easy to get into.
all right, fantastic. Well, Jay, it's been an honor and a pleasure sitting with you and kind of having this conversation. I really appreciate you coming on, and I think we've sowed the seeds of maybe having you back on again and talking more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. Thank you.